Hey, Zero Block 30 listeners, you can find us every Tuesday and Friday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Prime members can also listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
You guys know we're all about keeping it real, so let's talk about something making a real change for vets and active duty right now, Zyn nicotine pouches. If you're looking for a new way to enjoy nicotine, America's number one nicotine pouch comes in 10 varieties like wintergreen, spearmint, and coffee, and two strengths, 3 milligrams to kick off your experience and 6 milligrams to take it up a notch. Zyn is smoke-free, spit-free, and hands-free, giving you more freedom to move. Plus, it comes as is. No batteries or devices needed to get your Zyn on, which makes one less thing to worry about on your next trip to the PX. Look, when it comes to making a change, we know progress is more important than perfection. Zyn knows it too, because everyone's on a different path. If you're curious about what a premium nicotine experience looks like, head to your local convenience store, PX, or Zyn.com, that's Z-Y-N.com, to find out. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
Welcome back to another edition of Zero Block 30. Today we have one round in the magazine. Today we're going to spend the whole day talking about what's happening in Israel and Palestine.
It's today been all we're going to spend the whole day walking on eggshells.
Yeah, we're
trying
gonna be
to get
real
it right.
Careful.
Is the way we want to say it.
Yeah, and I think that there's certain situations that come across when the ZBT squad, when we talk about it in our group chats, that we know we're out of our depth. We just know we are. And whenever it comes to the Middle East and what's been happening essentially for centuries in the Middle East, Kate, me, and Cons, we're all out of our depth. So when that happens, we're going to bring in somebody else, and we're bringing in smart people to do that. And that's exactly what we're doing today. We have Jennifer Caffarella on, who is an incredibly smart person who spends her life dedicated to studying the Middle East and conflicts over there. She's in an organization that you're going to hear about in a little bit about what she does. But this organization, they do not take any money from Democrats, Republicans, independents, anybody that's associated with the government at all. It's all independent thought. It's verified information that they gather from their sources around the world to make sure that they know what's going on from a nonpartisan perspective. She even tells us that they don't do like analysis of what America is doing or even like some of our closest allies, because they want to maintain that independent nature of what's going on and not give away sources and methods. So they spend a considerable amount of time to make sure that everything's right. That's the reason why she was brought, that we're bringing her on. And I'm excited for you to hear about it, because we just recorded it. I feel like I learned something. Kate, I'm sure you felt the same way, where you feel that way. And when news is coming out like it is here, and I actually just got a message on through Instagram, and I'm going to read it, because I think it's important when stuff like this comes about.
Like Israel, Palestine.
I do feel like our voices, and I appreciate that people want to know our voices. And I got a message from a concerned listener and somebody that just follows us on social medias and expects us to have a response, which we typically do whenever there's world conflict. It says, I've been a fan of you guys for a long time. I listen to pretty much every episode you guys put out. I get that for the most part, you guys put out a comedy show and try to stay clear from politically sensitive topics. I'm sure you guys don't necessarily care about one listener being pissed off, but I think it's important for all of your followers to see and hear what is going on right now in Israel. So I have to say my piece. This is not about right or wrong, Palestinian or Israeli, but about being a fucking human being. Babies, small children, teenagers, elderly were slaughtered over the weekend and broadcasted on social media like a fucking movie. Families huddled together in bomb shelters were murdered in front of each other and their bodies mutilated. Teenage girls were raped and paraded through the streets of Gaza while being spat on. Small children kidnapped and subjected to God knows what conditions. 900 innocent civilians were massacred in one of the worst atrocities in recent human history, and you guys have nothing to say about it. If this was anywhere else in the world, you guys would have been tweeting like crazy. This is not the time to tiptoe around the Palestinian-Israel conflict. This has nothing to do with that. You guys are all parents and should be horrified at what happened this weekend. You guys are always real and always say how you're feeling despite the politics of whatever is going on. I am disappointed that just because this was a sensitive subject, you guys were silent. And I think there's some validity in that. I think that there is, because of the nature of the Middle East conflict and Israel and Palestine, probably the most tinder box of issues, I'd say, in the world, at least in the American perspective of what the world looks like. It is a huge issue. And saying anything wrong will get you canceled. It sometimes it doesn't. There is no fruit that can come out from what you're saying, and we're not going to say anything that other people have said. 900 people losing their lives, and some of the atrocities that they've mentioned, like
More
babies
than
having
that,
their
yeah,
heads cut
it's
off. Like
horrific. It's
it is horrific, and we're off. Like
we're a very
I think our
anti-war
listeners know,
crime here, is
we're
simple to
very
say.
anti-war crime, and
I
I
think
say all
people
that to
like,
say.
well, like you see people like Mia Khalifa being like, "Hey, Hamas, put remember to record in widescreen so that we can see these videos better." Blah blah blah. Dumb bitch alert. Like,
Dumb bitch alert.
there's people who are dumb bitch alert. Yeah, no, it's been pretty horrific to see. I think whatever side you're on, if you've lost any humanity whatsoever and you're committing atrocities, we're against that. I think it goes without saying. So.
Very much against it. And I don't know what our voices would have done this weekend to show that we're against terrorism, but we are. And I'd say that we have been. And I think if you've listened to this show, you kind of know where we stand as humans about being decent to each other and being kind in all aspects of life. And that definitely is not that. So obviously, we are against what happened with Hamas and Israel. And we hope that it doesn't cause a bigger conflict where more people lose their lives and it just escalates and this, it just rolls and rolls and rolls. It's terrible. And there is really no good way to say it, right? Like there isn't any, I just don't know what to say.
I think I will say this. I think I was wildly ignorant on the entire situation, and there was so much misinformation also coming out. And what we asked during this interview with an expert, where are we supposed to go for the real information and to get a real understanding of what's going on? Because it was difficult to get a grasp on things. And I've learned at this job over the years, you don't come out swinging unless you have a real grasp on it. And I didn't have that.
Yeah.
So that's why we speak with an expert here in the interview that you're about to hear.
Yeah, and I the only one other thing I'll say before we actually send you over to the interview, Patton Oswalt, who is obviously an international relations and political observer and law scholar. He's just an actor, actually. He's just like a comedian, but he's involved. But he did put out a statement that I agreed with, and he said it's absolutely reasonable and logical to be opposed to the Israeli government's treatment of Palestinians while simultaneously, in all caps, calling for the protections of Jews in Israel and around the world. Hamas is a terrorist organization that is attacking civilians by land, air, and sea. The images of kidnapped Israelis are shocking and devastating. Given the thousands of years of persecution of Jews, please know that your Jewish friends, even if they are not in Israel, are hurting and are fearful when things like this happen to non and non-Jews are silent. I understand many of us are afraid to voice an opinion because the crisis there is so nuanced and hard to understand, but we're afraid of saying the wrong thing. But we can and we must always use our voices to denounce terrorism and the senseless murder of civilians. And that's what we're going to try to do here in this interview today. We're trying to get a better understanding, not just so we could have it, because I needed it personally, but hopefully you, the listener, you've come to trust us as having a non-biased opinion. Or as non-biased as possible. And that's what we're going to try to do here today. But before we get
Just to learn
into that,
about,
we,
yeah, just to learn more
yeah.
about how we got here. Yeah.
Yeah, we do have some ads. And one of those is from our friends at BetterHelp. Zero Block 30 is sponsored by BetterHelp. Do you ever feel like your brain is getting in its own way, like you know what you should do or what's good for you, but you just can't do it? Therapy helps you find what's holding you back so you can work for yourself instead of against yourself. I mean, I have been going to more therapy lately. There's all kinds of things that are happening in my personal life. Kate, I'm sure you're going to need to. A little postpartum goofing is around the corner for you at your level of
Wheels are already
pregnancy.
falling off. Posted
Your
an
wheels
Instagram
are
story
falling off.
yesterday where I was crying.
Yeah, and I as your friend, I always want to write you back and be like, "You're okay, Kate. You're okay." But I think sometimes Instagram stories can just be your diary. I mean, that's just,
I said,
it's your
watch
own
me
little.
hop on this roller coaster, and then I'm gonna call BetterHelp afterwards. All right, okay.
Yep. So instead of getting on your Instagram stories and telling your thousands of followers how you're feeling whenever you can't find the spot for your doctor's appointment and your leg hurts from your sciatica acting up and you're back on a cane because you're knee deep in your pregnancy. If you need to talk to somebody, don't talk to your followers. Talk to the good people at BetterHelp, because if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Make your brain your friend with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/zero today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/zero. Here's the interview. Now on Zero Blog 30, we're privileged to have Jennifer Caffarella, who is right now, she is the Director of Strategic Initiatives and National Security Fellows at the Study of War. She does amazing things. You might remember, if you're a longtime listener, she came on at the beginning of the Ukraine and Russia conflict to explain what was going on, like we were 5 years old because we didn't know. Once again, there's a huge international conflict that has international ramifications about what's going on in the world. And so we needed her to explain this situation like we were five as well. Jennifer, I applaud your bravery just being out in public and talking about this issue that has the entire world's attention. How has the last couple of days been for you and going about and gathering this information and really just trying to put things together quickly?
Thank you. Well, thanks for having me. And I'm always thrilled at the opportunity to join you and to talk about these very difficult conflicts, which, you know, include the challenges of navigating what is, you know, our polarized media space here and a lot of pent up opinions on all sides. And I think one of the core challenges of what we are seeing now in Israel is that this, of course, has a long history, a long, very complicated history. And many people come into this current situation with a, you know, established perspectives. And a lot of that is legitimate, but I think the important place to start, perhaps for our discussion today, is to understand that what has happened in Israel in the past few days is fundamentally different than anything that has come before. So yes, there is a place for context. Yes, there's a lot of history that, you know, we can unpack and that is relevant in many cases to understanding what's happening now. But what has been difficult, I think, actually for a lot of people to, you know, learn in the last couple of days is just how new this situation is. Israel has never experienced this kind of massacre in its history. Yeah, Israel has never mobilized to this degree in its history. So we are watching something that is fundamentally new. And unfortunately, it could evolve in very new ways across the region.
And for anybody who just, it was a Saturday morning, sun was coming up. It was the end of a holy day. It was going to be a holy day. So everybody's sleeping in, relaxing. And Israel has this like multi-billion dollar fence that goes deep underground to keep the tunnel. You know, they have their security forces they have. And next thing you know, by air, land, and sea, Hamas is just driving straight through. Nobody's stopping them. It's apparently it felt like no defense forces, and they're entering all these little villages. They get up into 10 miles into Israel from the Gaza Strip. They show up at a rave at a music festival on paragliders. They're just driving across and they're taking Israelis back over the border to Gaza. They're, like you said, massacring people. There's all kinds of craziness going on. One of my questions was, and that I heard a lot of people asking, where were the Israeli security forces? Because a lot of the calls coming in from people hiding in their homes were like, where is our military? Where are they? How did this happen?
Yeah, that is the million-dollar question. And look, I think there's going to be a lot of lessons learned and retrospectives on all parts for how we got here, how the intelligence picture was missed, why the Israeli defense forces were not adequately prepared for this particular scenario. But that's where I think we need to emphasize just how different this Hamas attack was. This is not a continuation of the kind of tit for tat violence that we've seen in this theater for decades. This is not part of the established pattern of deterrence and reprisals between Israel and Hamas or Israel and Iran, right, which is the regional sponsor of Hamas and likely was involved to some degree in the planning and support for this attack, Hamas completely changed the game. They conducted what can only be described as an ISIS-style series of massacres with apparently the deliberate intent to provoke exactly this kind of major Israeli mobilization. So while it is in many respects, you know, a huge condemnable problem that the Israelis were not prepared to prevent this, right? This is why you have security forces. This is why you have intelligence forces or intelligence agencies. They didn't, this is in some cases a failure of imagination, just as much as it is a failure of preparation, because this is a complete paradigm shift. And we're still asking why. Why did Hamas decide to essentially risk it all, right? And risk what I think we're going to see in coming days, which is the full Israeli invasion of Gaza and the stated Israeli objective to destroy Hamas as a military and governing entity. So in some respects, it's not, you know, necessarily a surprise that this kind of major paradigm shift happened as a surprise. But we have to go back and, you know, understand where were the intelligence, you know, signs missed, and why amidst the political turmoil within Israel were the Israeli Defense Forces, you know, out of their kind of normal security posture. A lot of them had been redeployed to the West Bank, and those political tensions within Israel itself may be part of the answer to the question of why now did Hamas and potentially, you know, its sponsor Iran decide to cross this threshold when it did.
Right. And the political tensions you're talking about was the government was doing things that a lot of Israelis were disagreeing with. And a lot of those Israelis were troops who were saying, yes, if I get called up, I'm not going. There was a lot of dissension amongst the military that was really pitted against each other and maybe showed, like you said, like a crack in weakness. And then too, I was reading that, and this is all, please tell me if I'm wrong, there's the Gaza Strip and then the West Bank, and the main tensions were happening in the West Bank. So that's where the Israeli military was already kind of split up and having difficulties. And then they're focused on the West Bank, and maybe those two things, Hamas was like, well, here's an opening. But yeah, it's just crazy.
Yeah, it's in some ways a little bit of a perfect storm in that regard, in terms of these conditions just all coming together at the same time. We're still learning, right, what went into planning this for Hamas, and more, I'm sure, will emerge in coming days. But it does seem that this was, you know, planned for a long time. Right. And so this was not, you know, fully spontaneous by Hamas just simply taking advantage of the political turmoil. But the political turmoil in part explains why it has been so hard for Israel to respond. Although, you know, I think that's behind us now. The Israelis have come together. The security forces are going to, you know, back whatever needs to happen and the political leadership that exists. So I think the time for all of that now has passed, and Israel is going to face perhaps the biggest war of its existence.
One of the things that I saw from Jack Murphy, who hosts the Team House Pod, which is great, and I thought it was an amazing point, that there are so many organizations that are trying to figure out, news organizations across the world, different governments across the world are trying to figure out what happened. And it's almost like expecting us to know what happened on September 12th of 2001, where we're trying to put everything together. You have this huge travesty that hasn't happened. There's nothing like it in history that you can really recall back to. That being said, there's been a lot of scuttlebutt that has been coming up about the interconnection between Russia and Iran and Ukraine and Russia, and then how Iran is going to deal with Russia and how their buddies and going in. Are you seeing at the initial stages of your intel gathering that there is a connection of Russia and Iran to Hamas and how they're responding together, or is there any marriages there at all?
Quality sleep optimizes recovery, helping professional and everyday athletes perform their best. Only the Sleep Number smart bed is proven to improve the quality of sleep and provides valuable insights that can be used to support overall wellness. Talent on a college team allows the best players to outperform their opponents. But in the NFL, everyone is talented. Players entering the draft need every competitive edge they can get, starting with quality sleep. Training will only get more intense as players transition to the pros, so to optimize recovery, they can rely on Sleep Number for consistent, high-quality sleep. Experience game-changing sleep with a Sleep Number smart bed only at a Sleep Number store.
Yeah, it's a great question. So I'll take the opportunity to step back a couple of paces to look at the region and part of the story for how we got here, right? Because the Russians intervened in the Middle East in 2015 at Iran's request in order to, at the time, prop up Bashar al-Assad, the leader of Syria next door, which is one of Iran's core clients. And Bashar al-Assad has been pivotal in helping Iran prepare to be able to threaten Israel from multiple fronts, right? By positioning supplies and proxies on the Israeli border with Syria. We haven't yet seen those proxies engage Israel in this current round of fighting, but that's a risk. And I think a very real potential as the Israelis prepare to invade Gaza. Syria has also been a core transit point for Israeli, or for, I'm sorry, for Iranian weapons and supplies to Hezbollah, which the Israelis have tried to disrupt, but have not been able to prevent. So Russia's intervention into the Middle East was a huge shot in the arm, so to speak, for Iran's regional project. And what we're seeing now with this escalation by Hamas against Israel is quite potentially the next stage in how Iran intends to build out its regional project and accomplish its regional objectives, which do include the destruction of the state of Israel. So the scary question, and the one we have to be careful about not jumping to conclusions too soon, you know, in answering, but the scary question is, how far has Iran prepared itself through planning and through pre-positioning to exploit what is happening now in Gaza and to open potentially multiple fronts of conflict against the Israelis? The Russians are directly implicated in that, in all of it, because they have been fueling Iran's regional expansion since 2015. They have been providing direct, you know, military supplies to Iran. They're increasing their military supplies to Iran in return for Iran helping the Russians in Ukraine. So the Russia-Iran nexus is absolutely pivotal here. And unfortunately, the Israelis didn't see it that way for many years. And candidly, you know, I have been public in saying that aligning with Russia in the Middle East, as, you know, the Israelis sort of tried to do in the hopes that that would constrain Iran, was not a winning policy. It was not going to succeed. And unfortunately, we're seeing the consequences of that now.
I was reading too that Saudi Arabia, meanwhile, which is like a nemesis of Iran, has befriended Israel in the last few years. And it's almost like, I don't want to say like proxy war, but then Saudi Arabia has maybe a part in it too that's going to be stepping up. Or can you speak on that at all? Or
yes. So this is, you guys are asking all the questions that make the Middle East fascinating and incredibly frustrating to study.
I feel like Charlie Kelly at the corkboard and It's Always Sunny. I'm like, nothing on set, like, you know, so piecing.
And we have people in our DMs and I'm like, I don't know. I haven't been in the military for 10 years or 12 years, and that was a long time ago. And I wouldn't have known then either.
Yeah. Well, this is one of those situations where I like to tell people it seems hard and complicated because it is. So, you know, it's not that anybody that is a casual observer of the region should be able to follow this. Those of us that study it all day, you know, it takes us all day to study it and to actually understand these ins and outs. And what we've seen in recent years, as the United States has tried to take a few steps back from the region, especially after defeating the ISIS caliphate in 2019, is the United States has tried to foster greater security cooperation between Israel and regional Arab states that, you know, in the past have been anti-Israel and, you know, have even participated in or supported wars against Israel in the past. That has been very promising because of the extent of Iran's, you know, what we say hegemonic desire to kind of take over the region. There is alignment between actors that are threatened by essentially Iran's desire to take over Iraq, to expand in Syria, to connect that to Lebanon. It's a power grab by Iran. And it's also, you know, a religious war that Iran is waging. And we can talk about some of the dynamics of that. But that created a major opportunity for us to foster greater security cooperation between, you know, some of the U.S. Arab allies in the Gulf and the Israelis. That is and has been very positive. And it could be one of the factors for why we're seeing Iran be more willing to take risk to escalate in order to try to disrupt this kind of forming anti-Iran coalition. I don't personally think that that's the core reason we're seeing this escalation from Hamas. but it is part of that regional sort of shifting sands picture that we're going to need to watch. So far, the Saudis have, you know, have taken a different line and are standing more with reasserting their support for the broader Palestinian cause. Mm-hmm. So this is a little bit of a tension point with Israel because, of course, Hamas and this style of ISIS-type terrorism is not representative of the Palestinian people or the Palestinian cause. And so, you know, by kind of sidestepping that issue of this terrorist attack, you know, we're going to start to see some of that tension. My hope is that the Saudis come onto the right side of history on this and recognize that what we're seeing with this stuff out of Gaza is the latest iteration of jihadist terrorism and little more than that.
And can you speak to, you're saying, you know, Hamas's actions don't necessarily align with the Palestinian cause. Hamas, what, like 20 something years ago, took over as the leaders of the Gaza Strip, which is it like about the size of Camp Pendleton? It's like a 25-mile strip that I was thinking.
Small, yes.
Yes, it's very small. But they took over. Is that what the Palestinian people wanted? Was this a welcome takeover? And do you think most Palestinians are on board with what Hamas is doing? Or
listen, this is the hardest question when it comes to this war. And so I'll make a few things clear. The first is Hamas took over Gaza 2005 and then did win an election in 2006. Okay. So it is a governing entity over a population. However, the tactics that Hamas has used against Israel and in some cases against even the population within Gaza are not in any way representative of, you know, any kind of democratic or, you know, politically tolerable entity. And so the population of Gaza is in some cases held hostage by what has become increasingly a terrorist organization in terms of how it operates in some cases within Gaza, within the region, and now, of course, with the most recent attacks into Israel. The question of who defines the Palestinian cause, the Palestinian identity, is like the most heated question, is one of the most heated questions on the planet Earth right now.
Right.
But I think what is safe to say is that most reasonable human beings are not okay with the kind of savagery that was unleashed against innocent civilians, children, women inside of Israel. And to the extent that we are seeing people respond by saying, oh, well, what about the Palestinian cause? We need to be careful about that, because there are clear attempts by the Iranians and even by some Russian-backed actors to spin the narrative on this and to confuse reality, to make this as if it's about the political argument over Palestinians versus Israelis, which is not what this is about. This is terrorism.
Right.
And this is how a state protects its population against vile acts of terrorism. Unfortunately, one of the casualties of this war may end up being some aspects of the, you know, the Palestinian fight and the Palestinian political identity. And I think it's a very, very difficult position for the civilians in Gaza to be in, for the Palestinians in the West Bank to be in, for Palestinians abroad. But it's going to be vital that we not lose sight again of just the core acts of barbarism here and what it would take for any country to secure itself against that kind of threat.
And being a observer of the entire region, and obviously the United States plays a big part in essentially every region in the world, especially when one of our major allies is involved. What do you think the dangers of us not having a Speaker of the House and having all these military positions that aren't filled? Do you feel like that that's a real national security issue for Americans that are in the region and for globally?
Yeah, so I will say up front that, you know, I'm a military analyst and not a political analyst. So take this from where it comes. I think, in my view, the core challenge here that is represented not only by the war in Israel and Gaza, but also the current war in Ukraine and the threat against Taiwan, is this is a question of American resolve. We are making it harder for ourselves by continuing to fight so viscerally internally over partisanship. And writ large, it is my view that that weakens us. It weakens our ability to respond. It also weakens our values. It weakens our ability to stand by our allies. But it even sometimes weakens our ability to recognize the kind of evil that is surging in Russia's invasion against Ukraine, in the Hamas attack against Israel, in what China does to its own population, much less desires to do in a potential war for Taiwan. And we're losing sight of that. And we are focusing, in my personal view, on the wrong kinds of domestic squabbles. And this should be a wake-up call. I don't know that it will be, though, because unfortunately, our discourse is already so fractured, and we're seeing, you know, a lot of doubt and misinformation even continue to be applied to the situation in Ukraine, which is also a relatively clear situation where a neighbor just invaded with a genocidal intent to destroy, in this case, the state of Ukraine. These challenges are hard to respond to, right? There's
summer is all about the freedom to have fun. Forget a vacation and take a tequila-cation with new Truly Tequila Soda. This refreshing blend of real fruit juice from concentrate, sparkling water, and premium tequila blanco is the drink of the summer. Try all four refreshing flavors, all with 5% ABV and just 100 calories. Truly Tequila Soda. Keep it light. Hard seltzer beverage company, Boston, Massachusetts. Please drink responsibly.
Not easy solutions. I don't mean to say that like it's actually straightforward. It's hard, but it's not complicated. Israel has a right to defend itself against this kind of attack. The Ukrainians have a right to defend themselves, and they're looking to us. And it is my personal view that the longer we continue to fight over who should be the speaker, or, you know, these kinds of domestic partisanship, how do we get one step ahead of the opposing party? We're weakening not only ourselves, we're weakening our allies, and the world is going to get more dangerous for Americans, for U.S. prosperity as a result. That's the unfortunate, you know, consequence of allowing these things to go unaddressed. And at this stage, I do fear that we're losing some momentum and we're losing some perspective in being able to recognize just what's at stake if we don't act.
Well, I feel like what just happened in Israel is a prime example. They saw that the Israeli military was going against itself, and they saw an opening, and, you know, it shows weakness and it makes an opening pretty easy. I wanted to ask too, so far right now, we're not stepping in any kind of major way. We're just saying, what, sending condolences and everything like that. Is there a possibility that we could get involved beyond sending money, I'm guessing, is our big thing. But is there money, any possibility weapons, of that?
Yeah. So the other, you know, phenomenon that our adversaries, self-declared adversaries, I might add, are watching is that the U.S. has been disengaging from the region, as I mentioned.
Right.
And the Biden administration's approach, you know, publicly has been to kind of try to get out of it and just keep the Middle East quiet. Well, the Iranians read that for what it was, which is a lack of resolve and political will to get involved. And they're testing just how lacking is our resolve. I don't know what will happen next. The Iranians, through their proxies, have threatened to attack U.S. forces in Iraq and by default also in Syria if the United States, quote, gets involved in the situation in Israel and Gaza. It's not clear what get involved means to them. The United States will provide financial support. We are providing, you know, arms and whatever equipment the Israelis are requesting. We've also sent, I believe, a carrier now to the region, and we're positioning assets so that we can be prepared for certain kinds of scenarios. There are Americans among the hostages being held in Gaza. Yeah. So I imagine among the options being considered is whether we need to go in and get our people. Presumably alongside the Israelis, but, you know, I know there's a ton of planning that's implied in that situation that happens anytime there are American hostages.
Right.
So the scenarios that can unfold from here are numerous. There are many paths to the United States becoming involved on the receiving end, right, of attacks by Iranian proxies, or if Hamas does decide to start executing hostages as they have threatened to do. And executing American hostages. And then finally, we have to think about the scenarios where if this goes, you know, quote, goes regional, if Hezbollah gets involved, if proxies on the Syrian side of the border get involved, you know, this is going to be a major regional conflagration, and there will be some very hard decisions for the United States and our allies to make about what to do and how to support Israel.
And I guess, thank you for that. The final question for me would be, again, this shows my ignorance on the topic. What does Hamas want? Because I've heard Gaza referred to as an open air prison almost. Like you said, Hamas comes down on the people with a pretty tough arm, and then Israel has, you know, it's a blockade essentially. It's been this kind of area in limbo for so long.
Right.
And these people are kind of stuck there. And again, there's so much more to it. That'd be a whole other episode of how we even got here in the first place. But what ultimately does Hamas want? What is their end goal?
So you're asking excellent questions. So I know you keep saying like you're not an expert and you're not following this, but these are the questions to be asking. And I will continue to say and have said before that the simple questions are actually.
I always say Katie asks the best question. She does. Katie questions.
So I think this is a good question in part because, as I mentioned before, Hamas has risked it all. Hamas has risked its entire existence. Why? What is the intended effect of this attack? Hamas's broad goal is to destroy the state of Israel, right? That's also Iran's goal. So does Hamas think that it is single-handedly going to destroy the state of Israel? No, I don't think they think that because they don't have the capacity. Hamas is clearly trying to incite violence in the West Bank. They are trying to incite participation from, you know, the Iranian regional network into this war. And the question is whether the Iranians are in fact prepared to do that, right? Mm-hmm. One of the possibilities is that what Hamas is doing is drawing the Israeli Defense Forces into Gaza deliberately by conducting an attack so savage that the Israelis have no choice essentially politically but to invade Gaza as then a pretext for Hezbollah to get involved and for the broader Iranian regional network to get involved. That's the worst case scenario. We can't yet say for sure that that is what is happening, but that's the question that I ask because this, again, Hamas has decided to risk all the marbles, and it's entirely possible that Hamas will be destroyed as an entity when the when the Israelis invade Gaza. So they've been prepared to accept that cost. Suddenly now, after decades of not being willing to risk that, this is why we're asking these really hard questions about the Iranians and where this could go. And again, as you mentioned, unfortunately, the casualties here are going to include the civilians of Gaza. And that is just one of the greatest tragedies that I think Hamas is accountable for.
Right. That's terrible. For the innocent people on both sides, it's like, it's just been devastating to see. Because the Israeli attacks back at Gaza, too, are also, civilians are going to be casualties of that. And it's just.
Civilians are casualties.
And in a lot of the Western world, it's kind of bad to bring up that Palestinians have been treated poorly for decades now in the Gaza Strip. And like reading about the different deaths, that there's been 6,000 Palestinian deaths comparatively to 300 on the Israeli side. And you're reading all this from different sources and trying to figure out what is actually going on, what's happening. For somebody like me and Kate that don't have the connections and don't have like the system that you have in place to be able to look at all of this stuff from a very academic point of view and intelligence point of view, what are some websites or some media sources that you recommend following that are pretty nonpartisan, that are just basically fact-based about what's happening in the region, but it's also consumable for people that don't have an intense understanding of the long history of the Middle East?
Hockey is on. And no matter the city, no matter the team, no matter the game, whether it's face-off or penalty shots, regular season or playoffs, win or lose, no matter what happens, no matter where it happens, New Amsterdam Vodka is there.
Yeah, it's another great question. And I would say first, please do read our stuff at the Institute for the Study of War. We are producing updates. We're focused on understanding how the Iranian regional network is responding to this. We won't cover in detail what the Israelis are doing because we don't cover blue, so to speak. We don't cover US or our partners' operations for operational security reasons. But we will help to layer in that picture. Beyond that, unfortunately, my answer is that we all have to do the hard thing, which is to piece together conflicting information, because there is no one source I can point anybody towards that is unbiased. And as I mentioned at the start of this call, there is so much historical and pent up perspectives and opinion and grievances in this conflict that understandably shades how people are interpreting the current situation. But like, I need
people
to
people are fighting
again.
Each other in the streets in San Diego and in different cities as this. Yes. I mean, this is boiling over worldwide. There's been so
it
much
is. And
up.
Unfortunately, we're starting to see indications of, you know, violence against Jewish communities elsewhere. And I think that that may, in fact, increase. So my two pieces of advice are, one, be wary of accounts or news organizations or reporters, activists that are clearly trying to convince you by screaming the loudest, because there's a lot of that. And if somebody is screaming the loudest, they usually are not head down in the details trying to figure out what is actually happening right now. Mm-hmm. It's usually a reflection of an existing bias. So pay attention to the noise and try to sift through what is this person trying to convince me of, right? And mm-hmm. and what evidence are they actually bringing? The second is to be wary that there are state actors, including Iran and Russia, that are going to deliberately try to stoke up this kind of communal violence. The Iranians themselves, the Iranian supreme leader.
And domestically here, honestly. Like, I mean, happening here with our politicians.
Yeah, it happens with our politicians, and it happens by the Iranians and the Russians here as well, because they figured out that that's a weakness. And to the greatest extent possible, we need to try as human beings and citizens of this planet to recognize the humanity in all sides, to not allow this to become a communal war between Jews and Palestinians, or Jews and Arabs, Jews and Muslims. We need to recognize that there is a definable terrorist organization that conducted a heinous atrocity that does, in my personal view, need to be defeated, but that's what the Israelis have decided their goal is. And to the greatest human extent possible, we need to try to face that hard reality, even amidst the complications of the broader Palestinian cause and the broader questions of, you know, what needs to happen next, because we are in for a heck of a war. This is not a conflict. This is not a military operation into Gaza. This is going to be a major war. And while I hope that we find an off-ramp, while I hope that the United States and our allies find ways to deter a broader expansion of this conflict, those risks are at their peak right now. And the more that we in the West, or wherever we are, fall victim to this kind of polarizing discussion, the more likely it's going to be, actually, that the actors that are trying to drive this in the communal war direction, like Iran, are going to succeed. I know that's not great advice. I don't have too many uplifting things.
No, it's real advice. Yeah. It's real. I mean, it was the same kind of thing whenever you stopped in for Ukraine, Russia, and you said that this isn't going to be a short-term thing that's going to last a week or two. Like, we could be here for years, essentially, and it feels that way.
Hey,
like,
she knows what she's talking about.
She does. That's why we brought her back. I was like, hey, she was right here.
Turns out she was correct.
It was pretty spot on there. Well, my last question, we hear a lot about one of the technology aspects that Israel has is the Iron Dome. Was there failures in the Iron Dome, and what happened with that?
So that's a great question. I'm not a technical expert, but my understanding is the Iron Dome is in fact functioning as intended. And among the requests the Israelis have made is for us to help resupply them what they need to keep that functioning. Yeah. But the Iron Dome was never meant to provide like 100%, you know, cover essentially from these kinds of barrages at full scale. What we're going to see, you know, is likely a test of the limits of what the Iron Dome can do. And we're starting to now see, you know, the risk that we get barrages also from the Lebanese side. Mm-hmm. And that is quite dangerous for Israel because it is a very powerful defensive tool, but it has vulnerabilities. And in fact, by layering in its proxies across the region, the Iranians are trying to, you know, probe where the Israelis are weak. Can they use drones, right? And we saw some of these paraglider attacks out of Gaza into Israel. Yeah. And so we're going to start to see some limits. No system is infallible. My hope is that, you know, the Israelis can neutralize some of those, at least Hamas capabilities, sooner than Hamas can actually, you know, start to overwhelm aspects of the Iron Dome defense.
Right. All right. Well, Jennifer, thank you so much again for coming on and explaining to, I feel like I have a little bit of a better understanding, and hopefully this conflict dies down so we don't have to have a crazy understanding of everything that's going on. Hopefully find an off ramp.
Now I'm going to turn around and regurgitate this to other people. Like, I'm the expert. But I'm going to get it wrong again. No, but really, thank you so much for your time and for being smarter than us.
My pleasure. Thank you for asking these questions and for, you know, caring about what's happening over there. It's important.
All right, Jennifer. Thank you so
much. Thank you.
Take care.
Today's show is also brought to you by our good friends at Straight Talk. A new Straight Talk Wireless offering is now available, where you can get a Walmart Plus membership included on a Straight Talk Wireless plan for free. Only Straight Talk Wireless gives you unlimited data, talk, and text, plus a Walmart Plus membership included on select plans for free. Some of the perks of Walmart Plus through Straight Talk select plans are free delivery from Walmart stores, free shipping, no order minimum, Paramount Plus membership, member prices on fuel. You're going to get some gas saving. Straight Talk Wireless is available at Walmart and Walmart.com. People sleep on the Walmart app too. Okay. Like, if you get that, the Walmart Plus, I ordered things that you get. I looked at Amazon and then I looked at Walmart for the prices. So much cheaper. And they do the 2-day free shipping stuff too. If you got that program, buddy, it's so cold here. I got some new Long Johns. I needed those Long Johns. Lickety split. I did the Walmart Plus thing, and next thing you know, like 3 hours later, it was delivered at my house for free.
And you can do all that on your phone with that amazing deal
with the Straight Talk Wireless. And you get all, you not only get a good phone, but you get all kinds of stuff for free. Plus, Paramount Plus, you're gonna need that bad boy when March Madness rolls around. It's a great deal. Go get it right now, but just go to Walmart and Walmart.com. You don't even have to have like a promo code or nothing. Pretty incredible. All right, let's do some save rounds and alibis. Katie, we'll start with you. Oh, I guess we should say where Cons is. Where's Cons?
He's chickened out. He was afraid to talk about this. Coward. And so he just decided not to show up today. No, he's in D.C. for work. He's in Washington, D.C., so he's been busy. I'm still living for his daughter's outfits every weekend. I'm like, what's she wearing this weekend? What's she up to? Those two are the most stylish.
Oh, day. Yeah.
Stylish.
Oh, day.
Father-daughter duo in all of Hoboken, and I would say the New York City region.
I'd say the greater New Jersey area,
I'd say the whole East Coast, those two.
I don't know if I'd go that far. Let's back up a little bit. How was your week?
It was good. Nothing crazy on this end. Gearing up for, I hung giant spiders over the side of our house and have the hay bales and the pumpkins. And first time as a homeowner, so I'm getting as tacky as possible with all the Halloween decorating. So I'm loving that. Great transition. Israel, Palestine. I'm dangling spiders over my roof. How exciting is that? You know, wow, look at me. It seems dumb to talk about anything else after all that, to be honest, with everything going on. Still pregnant. I won't get into it again, given today's episode, but
I feel like people need a palate cleanser if you want to share. I'm not going to say you have to share because I think I know what the story is. I don't know if.
I'll say this. I tried to shave this morning because I have an appointment coming up. Haven't done that in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of blood.
Yeah, there will be blood. Yeah.
When you can't see what you're doing, you should not go down there with something sharp. I'll leave it at that. And I'll also say, I brought a mirror in there to try and help. I shouldn't have looked to see what it looks like down there right now because it was shocking. It was shocking. It's the size of a football for some reason. I don't know why. I got the biggest bussy in all of Chicago,
shouldn't that be a deterrent of being like a super fat, like just in general? Like, cause you have to do stuff with your.
No, I imagine the bigger you are, the smaller your bussy seems.
No matter who you are, no matter what you got going on, baby, not baby. Every now and then you have to give your general is a little bit of a glance to know what's going on. Like, just from a hygiene perspective.
I haven't looked down there in years, and I shouldn't have. I picked the wrong time to do it. There were tears. There was blood. It was a whole thing. Looks like somebody tried to lawn mow over a sea of stuffed animals in our shower. And so anyway, how about you? Save rounds?
So once that happens and it looks like that sea of stuffed animals, you can't be crawling around there cleaning up. What are we doing? We just...
No, I was running behind because it was a last minute decision to do it. And so I texted Pat on the way out. I said, if you want to earn some brownie points,
yeah,
get in there. I was the shower recruit at Paris Island, which meant cleaning the showers was my specific task. And they took away our razors due to somebody getting a little squirrely in the first couple weeks and having to be on red flashlight moonbeam watch in the beginning. And the night before family day, they gave us all our razors back. And so what did every woman do? Go running in there, shaving everything. And I was left to clean it up. Let me tell you something. It was, I still think people are like, oh, do you have any issues from the military? That's probably my main one. That's probably the one I think about the most. Of all the, saw some tough things. That was probably the worst thing.
That's got to be Chaps, a trash bag full of pubes.
Chaps, when you see in the fall people with all those bags of leaves outside by their, that's.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
All right. Well, I got hit by a car last week. I don't think
I mentioned that. You did.
I think it happened after. I was going down. I still love riding my bike. But I'll be honest, the day that I got hit and I had to ride my bike home, I had what I would say a little bit of PTSD. I was very nervous, like going from no cares in the world, whipping in and out of traffic, doing whatever I want to. And when I got hit, I was being safe. So I don't want to hear anybody saying that it wasn't, because I wasn't being
safe. Helmet on, I was in the bike lane.
In the bike lane.
Hand signals, echelon left.
Yep, I was doing echelon. I was doing skirmishes. I was doing all kinds of stuff. And I was making sure different. Well, that's exactly what happened. A driver came in and pied the corner a little bit too hard. They didn't turkey peek enough before they decided to turn. They turkey peeked directly into me, so my front wheel of my bike hit their wheel well and I flew over. Luckily, I was a black belt in McMap, so I was able to shoulder roll. Mm-hmm. And that, if I hadn't turned probably 4 or 5 inches in, I think my shoulder would have left my body, because it still really hurts, like my shoulder does. But I realized just how old I am, because there's certain little
humbling
incidents that come across in life where you're like, maybe I'm not that old. I got hit by a car, and one of the first things that when I popped up, I was like, that wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. I'm not that sore. I'm not that injured. I don't feel like I broke any bones. I'm not that brittle. So I was feeling pretty good about myself. I even was cocky about it, called Annalise on my way. I was like, hey, I just got hit by a car, while I'm like riding down the road with my AirPods back in, still trying to get to the office. I'm like, I got hit by a car. She's like, come home. I don't need to come home. I'm fine. Don't worry about it.
Next day, you were not fine.
The next day, I wake up and Annalise is already up. And she said, before I opened my eyes, she heard me go, just trying to muster the strength to get up. And that's still kind of where I'm at today. My shoulder is hurting a little bit, but I was nervous about bike riding in the cold. Threw on a little jacket today. Got a full-out motorcycle helmet now. Keeps my ears warm. I think I'm going to be able to do it in the winter. I wasn't cold in the slightest, and it was 40 degrees coming in this morning.
Can I say the one super awkward thing about the car accident, the getting hit by the car, that you, it was the same guy that shot you in Iraq.
It was fucked up. Yeah.
He got out of the car. He was like,
back from the dead. Yeah.
He was like, you again. Oh my God. It was his ghost.
Gotcha,
and
bitch.
He came for you. I thought that was a little awkward. I don't know how you handled that. But
it was fucked up. It was fucked up for sure.
Spooky season.
It is spooky season. Cardi had their birthday party, 11th birthday party, roasted my ass. So they had a scavenger hunt where they went around this park and there was different things that they had to find. And they're like a nature scavenger hunt. And one of the clues, they were finding different clues, and it was a picture because all the kids have phones. So you had to go find this thing, take a picture of it, and then you make like a little collage of all the different things that you find at the end. That's your little scavenger hunt. Well, one of the clues was old. And Cardi came up and took a picture of me and was like, sorry, I needed that for my scavenger hunt. And I was like, for what? And they're like, they showed it where it just said old. Like, you son of a bitch. Like, fucking roasted.
Roasted.
Yeah.
Could have been worse. They could have been deflated balls, could have been on the list or something vague.
Yeah, that would have been really messed up.
Really tough.
That would have been really messed up. All right, well, that was an episode. Sorry for bringing you guys down and being depressing. We tried to bring it back with a little bit of pube jokes, but I'm not sure.
No, probably bad timing on that.
Yep, we'll see you next week.
Hey.
Another treat.
Okay.